This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hello, John.
Good morning, Andrew.
It's morning.
Yes, it is.
You threw me a curveball. I don't know what to say now.
Didn't expect that one, huh?
No, not at all. Morning. Wow. The year was 1998. A film called Dark City hit. A sort of movie about virtual, not really, reality. Not virtual reality, not computer-based, but alternate perceptions of states of reality. 1999 hit, and three movies were released in its wake. The Matrix, The 13th Floor, and the one that we're gonna talk about. Each of these films were very computer-based, unlike Dark City. And we're not talking about Dark City, I'm just saying that's where the starting point was. Anyway, what did we just watch?
We watched Existence.
Hello, I'm David Cronenberg. I'm here to send you a few postcards from the world of Existence.
There's an intimacy involved in playing Existence that is beyond description. So how does it feel? The game's a lot more fun when it starts feeling realer than real.
I do feel the urge to kill someone here.
Don't make me go back in there alone. Play with me.
We're still inside the game.
Play with me.
You've never seen Existence?
I saw it on, I'm pretty sure, video, not DVD, back when there were such things. After it
Wait,
came
what
out.
What do you mean video? Wait, video, what?
Yes.
What is this video thing?
Cassette tape, put it in a video cassette.
You're talking about this antiquated, archaic thing that people are trying to bring back as some sort of romanticized thing, device called VHS? Is that what you're talking about?
I believe, I'm pretty sure I saw this prior to DVD format. Although, I mean, DVD were out at that time, but I mean, prior to me actually investing in that newfangled technology. I believe I actually saw this on an old school VCR on the...
A VCR?
In the year that it came out.
A VCR is a thing that plays or records onto VHS cassette tapes, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Whew. I'm glad I got that information correct. Otherwise, I don't know how I would live with myself.
But yeah, I
being an old person,
missed this one in the theaters, saw it on home video.
Did I see it in theaters? I think I might have, but maybe not. I don't know. I was working at the Blockbuster when it came out on home video.
I can't remember if I was working at the Hollywood Video or if I was at the mom and pop shop that I worked at first. But it was at one of those that I rented it.
It came out in 99 in the cinema, and then it was released probably in 2000.
Yeah, which would probably be Hollywood Video, but...
Yeah. So, John, we haven't even talked an ounce about the movie exactly, just where we were when it came out.
Yes.
Would you care to try to summarize the thing? Summarize.
We have a hotshot virtual reality video game designer is testing out her latest product, and things go sideways when someone who is targeting her for death shoots at her and interrupts everything. She's played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. Her name's Allegra, and she and Jude Law end up on the run from these quote-unquote realists who want to see her dead and the destruction of this virtual reality game called Existence.
Okay, so they're on the lam, running away from... It's not just realists, running away from the competing software company as well. Hardware software company. Game developers. Is the future?
Yeah, it's some sort of future where everybody has a port in their back installed. It's like at one point Allegra mentions that
The Matrix, they had the ports in the back of their neck, right?
Yeah,
and they jacked in through their spine in the back of their neck. Now I don't know, I didn't look it up, when this movie came out in relation to The Matrix, how long they were both in development, who had whose spies in the inside going, like, you know, The Matrix has a back port in the back of their neck, why don't we move ours to the lower back, you know?
You have this little port in the small of your back. It's allegedly very safe. You could get it done at the mall.
Yeah. Self-guided installation. Puts a hole in your spine. That doesn't sound painful at all.
No. Jude Law's character doesn't have one for fear of this procedure.
I have this phobia about having my body penetrated.
Right. Yeah, you could pop this thing into me, and then what happens if I get paralyzed? Oops.
Right. It just sounds like an espionage film, really. Like industrial espionage. Later, there was a movie called Cypher. Have you heard of that?
The name does not sound familiar, but who knows? It might be one that has...
Lucy Liu and Jeremy Northam, and it was directed by Vincenzo Natali, who did Q.
Okay.
Now, when you watch it, that thing is like sci-fi looking. Everything is sleek. That modern neon sort of thing. But what it comes down to, that's just an industrial corporate espionage film. Sort of like if Mission Impossible was just between two companies instead of countries. And that's what this movie actually sounds like in our description of it. So what's so weird about it?
Well, for starters, it's directed by David Cronenberg. And this is still in the time of Cronenberg where he was very into body horror and really...
However, body horror in this and body horror in his other films are vastly different.
But you can definitely see some parallels with Videodrome in the weird fleshy stuff, yeah.
Just thematically, first off, yes, you're right. It's about what we're intaking as far as popular media goes. So Videodrome was TV, cable, and this is video games. So it's like the next step. It's actually kind of predictive of how video games are going. But
yeah, I was actually surprised and did a little bit of research just to see, because with Existenz being essentially a Matrix version of an MMORPG,
yeah,
you kind of have this... I had to see, like, how many of these types of games existed when Existenz would have been in production, which then there was only one, really, at the time. And yet this movie kind of predicted things like World of Warcraft and Guild Wars and all these huge games that suck in people's lives. You know, even though they're not being jacked in mentally, they're living their lives through these little avatars.
Yeah. So, yeah, predictive in that sense. But the body horror aspect of it, let's go, again, using Videodrome. Videodrome had a lot of body morphing, like hallucinogenic mutations. His chest forms a hole, which kind of looks like a vagina, deliberately. His hand turns into...
into a gun.
Just a mutated pistol that has cable cords as veins and stuff. So it's like a combination of industrial and flesh.
Long live the new flesh!
But it's not just a hand and a gun. It's like a combination of the two where
they're fused together.
Yeah. Fused. You said fused?
Yes, I did.
That's correct. It's disgusting stuff. A lot of the edges of this special effects makeup looks like scar tissue type thing, which is not really that positive, like burn scars and whatever. We all love you, flesh and all, however you look, but we all know that burn scars are not pretty. So that's deliberate in these movies. They're there to look disgusting. But in Existenz, there's no real body horror, even though this is considered by everybody a body horror film.
Well, think about it. It's like, this is definitely where I lean heavily on that kind of concept. It's the pod is this bizarre fleshy thing that at one point has to undergo surgery.
Yes.
So it seems like it's kind of sentient, or at least how Allegra seems to describe it.
Looks like an animal in there.
Makes it seem like it's a sentient living thing, even though it's like a parasite in a way, living off of whoever owns it and runs the games through it.
I would say symbiotic, right? Is it really parasitic? Let's explore that. It actually ports in through an umbilical cord into the back of your spine. Well, what's the front of your spine? Your belly button? So it goes through your spine, and it's really umbilical looking.
Yeah, very much so.
Where do the batteries go?
It uses your energy.
It powers itself through you.
There's no battery.
You're the power source. Your body, your nervous system, your metabolism, your energy. You get tired, run down, it won't run properly.
So how is it parasitic versus symbiotic?
Actually, yeah, I guess...
symbiotic is a beneficial relationship, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Symbiotic would be a better phrase.
Well, what I'm getting at is maybe you're right that it's parasitic, because symbiosis, you have something that benefits, that you both actually benefit from it.
Yeah, whereas, that's when I started, when you said symbiotic and started going with that, I'm like, yeah, you're right, because you kind of get the entertainment value, this bliss that comes from whatever's running through this thing while it gets to live.
Yes. Now here's the part where, is it truly beneficial though? The entertainment aspect. This is where the realists come in. They say no.
Don't you think the world's greatest game artists ought to be punished for the most effective deforming of reality?
These are the people that currently right now who say turn off your cell phones. Have a minimal, there's this brand new minimal cell phone. There's two of them where it's just their numbers that light up. There's no screen. It's just numbers that light up on a white, semi-translucent keypad, whatever. But it's a cell phone. It works with your provider. You just use it for phone calls. And there are people that are like, do that because you're being bombarded by technology and it's to your detriment. And that's what the realists here are saying.
Yeah. And looking at...
Are they right? Are they correct? Do you think?
Well, that's the thing. Looking at the Existenz game itself and how almost indistinguishable from reality it is, I can see the fear of that type of game because, I mean, yes, we see that there are some things that obviously show that it's a game when they jack in, where there are NPC characters that require prompts. And if you...
Yeah, very specific phrases that you have to say in order for them to get out of their hold loop.
Yeah.
So that the game can further.
Yeah, but the problem with it is when they go into it, we don't know what the game is. We're just compelled to do this. We're compelled to go here. We're compelled to have a sex scene now because it's apparently part of the plot, which surprises Allegra for some reason, though isn't she the one behind this? Why would it surprise her that there's all of a sudden the main characters need to have sex?
Yeah, what I find interesting is that it's kind of a theoretical concept about God, even. If she is the God of this world, she created it, right?
Yeah.
The programmer. She sets down ingredients, basically, for that world that they're in, the VR. And those ingredients build off of each other while she actually doesn't do any architecture stuff. She does basic architecture and just lets the rest of it decorate itself and do whatever it does. So she's not in charge of the story. She doesn't oversee any of that, but she knows the rules when she's in there. It's kind of analogous to a sort of theory of God where God is possibly like a game designer and designs it that way and lets the random happen. He can look at all parts and know the program, know the future of it and whatever, but he's standing outside of it. So that's how he sees it all. He doesn't get down into the meticulous and go, oh, I know this. I know exactly why we're prompted to have sex. No, the game itself built upon itself to prompt the two characters to have sex, even though she's the creator of it. She has no knowledge of it. I find it to just be an interesting concept anyway. My philosophical analogous stuff might be nonsense, whatever.
But it's at least a theory where I'm just kind of staring at it going, that sounds like a plot hole where shouldn't she know this? And at least you have a theory you can back up with something.
Yeah, well, it eventually doesn't, you feel like, yes, I totally understand your feeling of plot hole, but eventually...
There isn't a reason for it.
It's not a plot hole.
Yeah, there's actual cause behind it.
Yeah, so there are things that I forgot about this movie, and I have seen this many times, and I do think every time I see it, I forget that this ending exists in the way that it does. There's a certain point where I think, oh yeah, that's the end of the movie.
Have I won the game? Have I won?
And not because it feels like the end of the movie. My memory just stops right there. And then the end of the movie happens and I'm like, oh, right. Okay, that's better.
Well, that's the thing. Things I remembered from my initial viewing of this film years and years ago pretty much was the pods, the weird things that they fondle around and just kind of like, okay. The bone gun, especially that scene in the restaurant where Jude Law's eating and then putting it together. And then I remembered that ending. I had forgotten how kind of chaotic it was before that ending.
It's the chaos part that I always remembered as the actual ending as opposed to the real ending.
Yeah, it's like,
let's step back.
Yeah, I remembered that part.
You mentioned the bone gun.
Yeah. I also forgot that there was two times we see it.
The bone gun makes an appearance at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
As the catalyst for everything, really. So they are testing out the device. Chris Eccleston is one of the software marketing guys, so they set up this test group.
Existenz. One word. Small e, capital X, capital Z. Existenz. It's new, it's from Antenna Research, and it's here, right now.
He has the worst American accent ever.
It is a it might not be. It might be a Northeastern accent.
Yeah, it felt like he was trying to do a Boston accent and kind of failing at it, but then there's also reasons behind that, too, you find out.
Yeah, so he introduces Allegra Geller. She introduces her game pod, which, as you said, is this fleshy pod, but it really, if we're trying to describe this without any visual clue except for what you've already previously seen, you know what silicone looks like and feels like as far as molded silicone. Well, that's what these are like, except they're in sort of organ shapes, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a stomach liver hybrid thing,
encased
but with
in this smooth silicone with also smooth knobs.
Yeah.
But those knobs are not like turning knobs. You don't twist them or anything. You just kind of bundle, as you mentioned.
They're not really prominent. They're kind of inside this fleshier cover, so you're just moving them around gently.
That's weird that you have to do that in order to operate the game, and everybody does that. It's on their lap, and they're just kind of fondling these knobby, fleshy things. But then there's a person that stands up and says,
"Death to the demoness, Allegra Geller!"
And he pulls out a gun that's made of bones. Specific bones that we don't understand, and it shoots a tooth in her shoulder and shoots a tooth in Eccleston's chest. The ball gets rolling. We go on the lam. Ted Peichel, who is played by Jude Law, has to save her life. He doesn't have a port. They stop off at a gas station because apparently...
ironically named Country Gas Station.
Well, yes, this is actually the first time I started noticing anything that they said that had a title like that was Country Gas Station, Chinese Restaurant. And they were all in the same type of fonts. And this is the real world that we're in?
Yeah.
That's actually a clue that it may not actually be in the real world because it's all designed the exact same way. And I picked that up kind of the first time, and I've seen this many times. I kind of feel like I'm a dumb viewer.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't recall that my first viewing. Granted, my memory is very hazy about aspects of this film, but I don't ever recall knowing that. So, again, when we're questioning what reality we're in, are we in reality, are we in a game, any of this kind of stuff, you know, you get clues to certain things, but I never caught on to these clues the first time.
Yeah, and as...
But I think it was also not looking for them either.
Oh, right, sure. And not knowing to look for them. As the story is presented to us, we are... plopped into us, the real world. But everything seems really designed, and that's not foreign to films. Some films have high art decoration and art direction that is a sort of standardized.
Repo Man with everything being generic brand.
And that wasn't presented as virtual reality. That was presented as satire. So here, it's actually a little bit of both. Satire on game development and also a clue that they're in a virtual reality?
Perhaps.
Bum, bum, bum. It's actually quite interesting. Now, he gets ported by a guy named Gas, who runs a gas station.
Played by Willem Dafoe.
And Willem Dafoe is just this guy who just loves the game system.
Geller's work liberated me.
Liberated?
Did you ever play a game Art God? One word, capital A, capital G.
I don't have a bioport.
Thou, the player of the game, Art God. Very spiritual. Funny, too. God, the artist, the mechanic.
And Ted Peichel gets ported into the game system with Allegra, and they go on this game, and everything is real and weird. It looks exactly the same as where they currently are, except it's a slightly different location. People they interact with are the same. Everything's the same, except wrong. Slightly weird. And they go to that Chinese restaurant.
And at that point, they're instructed by a person to go there and order the special.
And this person is Don McKellar, who's a Canadian. This is a totally Canadian film. Only, like, one or two people aren't Canadian in the cast. Because it's Telefilm Canada that produced it, so they have to have mostly Canadian actors. Also, Cronenberg's Canadian. So, that guy tells him to go to the restaurant.
He's told to order the special and make sure that he does, even if the waiter refuses. Goes ahead and orders this, and it's made of these weird two-headed lizards and other mutated creatures that we've seen in passing. But...
Michael, what are you doing?
I don't know. I find this disgusting, but I can't help myself.
It reminds me of those old 50s Jell-O recipes. Those disgusting Jell-O fish or turkey consomme, or you know what I'm talking about?
No, not at all.
They're these old, you can just even Google it, like 50s Jell-O recipes. And they're these monstrosities. The worst monstrosities. Meat and Jell-O. Just imagine all kinds of meats embedded in Jell-O.
Doesn't sound very appealing.
This is what Jell-O did to promote their product in the 50s and 60s. These cookbooks that were like, yeah, it's new, it's interesting, it's fresh, it's wow. And that's what this reminds me of, except not as colorful. It's really gross looking, even more so. It's murky looking. And they look like fish or salamander.
Yeah,
they
all have like this lizard that we see it walking around at one point. And
it's two heads.
It's got two heads. Really kind of looks like almost a dragon. Except
yeah.
Except a little miniature. But he's compelled to eat this horrible looking stuff. And as he does, he starts taking the bones and starts mashing them together. And it's very quick that we realize that he's making the same gun that we saw in the beginning of the film.
Oh my God. This looks awfully familiar.
Now the trick is, they are inside of a virtual reality that is separate from the beginning of the film. But they have the same kind of weapon. Exact same kind of weapon. Now, I understand we have real kind of pistols in video games and real kind of pistols in the real world. But these two guns are foreign to any kind of real world. Which makes you question the very beginning of the film. Wait, I recognize that.
Yeah, the clincher is Ted pulls a bridge from the back of his mouth and loads it into the gun.
Do you have that bridge in real life?
Absolutely not. My teeth are perfect.
He had apparently ammo for this thing on him the entire time, and he didn't even realize it because he doesn't have a bridge.
Right. So in the virtual reality, he pulls out his teeth and loads the gun.
I do feel the urge to kill someone here. I need to kill our waiter.
What can I do to make your lunch more pleasant?
I found this in my soup, and I'm very upset.
And then he shoots the waiter for no reason.
It just feels like he needs to, and he does. And all hell breaks loose. We now start into a part of this film, and basically this film ends up with a lot of crosses and double crosses. Everybody's betraying everyone. Everyone's a double agent of something. Some people are pro-virtual reality. Then all of a sudden, they're now realists. And at this point, I didn't so much lose interest, but like looking at my notes, it just becomes, and now everybody double crosses everybody.
So it's like a quick summary, like a quiet summary.
Yeah,
no details. Everybody's backstabbing.
They had gone to Ian Holm to repair the damaged pod after.
This is what you were talking about, where it is body horror-like, except still not
horrific.
Yeah,
they start doing surgery on this thing.
Yeah, they do surgery on the pod because it's corrupted somehow.
The guy, Gas, puts in a bad thing and it...
A bad port?
It basically blows up the pod. And this pod also gets infected and it's just weird, gross stuff happens to this thing. That's just kind of unappealing to look at to begin with. And it's like when it gets infected, it's kind of gets bruises all over it.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty sad looking. Not like sad, like, aw, poor thing, let me pet you. No, not like that. You don't want to go near it. The concept, again, of these pods is very, very odd. And how they came up with it, I want to know how Cronenberg just comes up with his ideas. If it is in a David Lynch sort of way where he dreams things up.
Well, I'm wondering if, because this is very game-centric, although all the stuff about game design feels bad. Like, someone came up to him, hey, I want to make a video game with you. Let's do something. And then it went bad and south, and he just got pissed off. And then now you have this movie that he decided to write about where, you know what? Let's kill the game designers.
Yeah, that's like a major theme in it, where somebody pops up and says, death to, fill in the blank, game designer.
Yeah, it kind of feels like there's something personal here that he's excising from him.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way, that maybe he had something going early on.
Yeah, because that kind of seemed to be a thing in the 90s where, and actually even fairly recently too, but people will try to get Hollywood to make games because they're trying to elevate themselves with the advent of CD-ROMs and stuff. I mean, you had The Dig with LucasArts and Steven Spielberg, which was like a basic concept for, I believe it was, Amazing Stories. They wanted to do this thing about a archaeological dig on an asteroid, and, you know, things go wrong, but it was, you know, too big a concept, so, okay, we'll make it into a video game.
Huh, that's interesting. And then maybe that failed and they turned it into Armageddon, perhaps?
Oh, no, that got made. That's actually a pretty good game, too.
Hmm.
Yeah, it'd be something like that where someone wanted to do a horror-themed game with Cronenberg and things just fell apart. Again, all speculation, no idea if anything like this happened. I'm not trying to sound authoritative on this subject, but like I said, there seems to be something.
Now, do you keep up with game development news and stuff?
I do. I'm not as big a gamer as I used to be, but I still follow many things. And, like, there was the Silent Hills game.
Yeah.
That was a collaboration from Konami, Guillermo del Toro, and the guy from the Metal Gear Solid games, like Hideo Kojima.
Yeah. Folks out there listening who still might not understand my relationship or John's relationship with me and vice versa, we were friends through a friend, and I needed work, and John had been working at a bookstore and they had an opening, so I got a job at the bookstore and completely annoyed the crap out of John. And then he moved to GameStop and I was like, I can't work here without a little John guy next to me. So I was like, John, do you have a position open at GameStop? And he did. So I got a job over at GameStop and continued to annoy John. So I'm also the very most reluctant gamer. I enjoy a game, but I'm not a gamer, right? Except I know enough that somebody might go, hey, that guy's a gamer. And I'm like, no, shut up. No, I'm not. But John, at the time, you were a gamer. Lauren, our buddy, was a gamer. Steve was a gamer. All these people were gamers except for me, which is how I knew a little bit about games.
Well, it's like I was mentioning this game, Silent Hills. Look up on YouTube for a thing called PT.
Oh, yeah. I know about Silent Hills.
Many playthroughs that exist. Well, this is also for the audience if they don't know.
All right.
It's amazingly creepy and a example of what might have been had this collaboration actually gone through. And as I said, you know, maybe there could have been something awesome body horror game from Cronenberg, but
yeah, the closest thing we're gonna get is this movie.
Yeah,
previously mentioned, Dark City was kind of a virtual reality thing where it was actually just a
reality the entire time,
questioning reality movie. The Matrix was a virtual reality.
13th Floor, which I love. Of the three, I enjoy The Matrix. I think it's a fine, it's a decent enough, you know, action movie. Its sequels suck, but you know, right. The first one's still a favorite. 13th Floor, of these three films, I think executes the idea of not only questioning reality, but the ramifications of creating these simulated realities and things like that.
And how it affects the real world.
Yes.
This movie does too, but this movie likes to double back on itself all strangely.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to spoil the ending?
A little bit.
Everything that we see in the film is all a game created by someone in the real world.
So we are plopped into the movie at a game point, not the real world, but we are tricked into thinking that it's the real world.
Yeah.
That is a futuristic sort of science-y thing.
Yeah, all the, pretty much the main characters that we've interacted with, or at least speaking roles anyway, are all people who are playing a game called Transcendence.
Capital C, capital Z, Transcendence. It's new, it's from Pilgrimage, capital P, capital I, and it's coming soon.
Also, we didn't talk about the spelling or the way it's stylized. Existence.
Small e, capital X.
Okay, right.
Small letters for I-S-T-E-N, capital Z.
There you go. I wasn't going to do that. I was going to try to do it in a shorthand way.
Yeah, I wrote it down specifically. Same thing with transcendence, because it's like existence, pointlessly complex spelling.
So CZ, what game are you going to play? CZ.
Once we get this reveal, that's the thing that, aside from explaining all the weird crap that bugged me in that, the fact that everything was all chaotic and everybody's betraying everybody is actually a point that someone brings up.
Yeah,
that I actually laughed at.
Before this reveal, everything is like a ground war with soldiers running around with guns, but they're actually from
the realists.
And they're fighting both companies now, and then the game breaks. Not breaks, but they come out of the game, and one of those guys, yes, does address that. Yeah. Kind of
the twists and turns at the end made my head spin. Maybe there was too many too fast to absorb.
Which there's a great, and it does kind of end on a similar note, but there's a great moment in that fight where it turns out Jude Law is also a realist agent, and he's going to kill Allegra, but she kills him first, and she's just kind of spinning around in this chaos going,
have I won the game?
And that almost feels like that should have been the film's ending. Because you
see, this is what I was thinking. That's the point where during the ground war, that was it. Like, this is just a game, right?
Or we don't know because her brain is so fried from, she acts like a junkie.
Right. She's like, this is a game, right? This is just, right? Like that whole.
Yeah. Like I said, she's a junkie to this whole thing because she's, you know, kind of sitting there like she's totally stoned at moments when she's kind of in the game, but not really in the game. She's just laying there fondling this thing. And she's just kind of like dreamed like and out of it.
Yeah. It is like a junkie.
So it kind of seems like she doesn't know what is real and what isn't in this world.
Well, that's so, brought up a lot by Peichel. He's like,
he freaks out. Yeah.
I'm not sure here where we are is real at all. This feels like a game to me. You're beginning to feel a bit like a game character.
It's like he has to get out at one moment to know that he's in the real world.
Existence is paused!
When they finally confront the actual game developer, it's now Ted Peichel and Allegra Geller as the realists.
Yeah.
And they pull guns on her, and then they proceed to shoot him.
And the guy who was the waiter, you know, is caught off guard at one point, and he's like,
No, you don't have to shoot me!
Hey, tell me the truth. Are we still in a game?
The movie plays around with perceptions. plays around with addiction. It's got a ton of themes. It's actually, this is why I like to watch this movie from time to time. And it doesn't have to be 5 years apart. I can watch it, you know, a year apart. It doesn't matter. It's a really rich in commentary film. And it's slightly humorous, more so in its absurdity. So I like to tickle my brain with that stuff every so often. And this movie does a good job of it. And I always forget the end of it. I always forget that maybe extra ending because I think my mind, when I watch it, I prefer...
It has a logical end point.
Yeah.
And then continues.
The continuation is a twist, which is fine. And I like the twist. It's good. But that logical end point is where my brain stops and goes, no, that's good enough. Leave it there.
Yeah. I didn't necessarily like the movie. I liked the themes it brings up. But in a way, and I'm a fan, I like Videodrome,
mm-hmm.
which is a hard movie to like.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
But I like that movie. But this, weirdly enough, just kind of seems a little too gross for me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I propose a theory. You're saying you don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not entirely certain why. Other than, I mean, you could, maybe it's tiptoeing on, oh yeah, I like games. But I don't think that's it. It's just, because I thought about this also when Crash came out a couple of years before this as well. And it just kind of seemed like he was still working out that weird psychosexual thing that he, you know, really focused on in Crash, obviously. And this definitely has a lot of that with, you know, the fondling of the controllers. She's kind of fondling his port and sticking her finger in it.
Yeah, he at one point licks her port.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing? And then they make out.
Yeah, there's...
So, my theory for you... First, I'm going to comment on Cronenberg. Cronenberg also did Naked Lunch, which if you want to hear me talk all embarrassed-like about it, go ahead. That's the second episode we ever did here. Naked Lunch was a brown movie. Brown and green. The Crash movie was a blue palette.
Yeah.
This movie is back to brown. Brown and ambers. Now, LB, who's been on the show... She says she doesn't want to watch the movie anymore. Like, she's seen it before. She liked it or didn't like it, whatever. But she really didn't like the palette. It grosses her out.
Actually, yeah. You know what? Thinking about that, because I also kind of have an adverse feeling towards Naked Lunch. I don't hate the film, but you're right. Maybe it's probably the color palette.
The color palette is very... It's ambers and browns and some dingy greens, right?
Yeah.
All of those colors together say illness, and they're off-putting. And it's, I believe, deliberate when he works in a very strange...
Oh, definitely.
Film like this.
Cronenberg is the kind of person where everything is deliberate.
What do you think of that theory, sir?
Yeah, I can agree with that, because, like, you know, as you said, with Naked Lunch and Mike kind of going, that's also gross. But I still find it gross in its, you know, a disturbing film, but I'm not as off-put by Crash. I'm skeeved by it. I don't really want to watch Crash ever again.
Well, there's context to Crash that lets you know about that. It's a very industrial and industrially lit film, and then it's got the gross, weirdo scar sex, and that's the off-putting thing. It's not the visual palette of everything isn't the off-putting thing.
Yeah.
This movie, I think, ramps it up more than... contextually, the color palette doesn't need to be this way in existence, whereas in Naked Lunch, the color palette has more of a reason because of the time setting and being in Morocco at some point and so on, you know?
Yeah. I would have to watch this again, at least the ending, but I don't think the color palette changes when they're in reality and then they're in a game.
It doesn't. Nothing changes. So I just...
Which could also add to the, are we in... Are we still yet in another game?
Yep.
How far down the rabbit hole have we gone?
Right. So, John, the big question. Do you recommend this film?
I do. I would recommend it. But I would give a little bit of warning. It's, if you can get through the first 8 or so minutes of it, then you can probably get through the rest of the film.
All right.
Yeah, because those first 8 minutes, again, it's the umbilical cords, the fondling, the bone gun. It's a lot of stuff kind of thrown at you right at the start.
Yeah, okay.
If that doesn't really gross you out to a point where you can't watch the film, then you could probably get through the rest, because I don't want to necessarily say it doesn't get worse from there, because again, like I said, surgery scene and all that stuff that happens later, but you've got the taste of it already there, so you understand, okay, this is what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, yeah, it's a warning, but of course, as always, followed by if.
Yeah, it's got interesting themes. There's some, you sit there and, it's like question reality, and if you're definitely throw it together with those other two films from 99, and you definitely have an interesting evening.
Yeah, a trilogy, if you want to spend that long in virtual reality. So I think that's it, John. Thank you very much for suggesting
Thank
this
you.
One.
There was a point where I sat there and went, I'm punishing myself this time. I did this to myself.
Well, it does have the sickly color palette.
Yes, and again, I'm glad I did get a chance to watch it again. I like Cronenberg in general. I think he makes very interesting films. It's always someone that, when he releases something, I want to see.
Yeah, that's true. It's even if you don't like his movies, there's always something there that is oddly rewarding.
Yes, very much so.
On that note, everybody, good night. Even though we said good morning.
Good night, everybody. And I salute you all. Except you can't see it.
All kinds of meats embedded in Jell-O.